Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff, chronicles of my failures at greatness, at Facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Melody Lauer.
Hello.
You look tired.
I'm exhausted, dude.
It's been a rough week.
I think we should reconsider our scheduling paradigm.
Yeah. So this is one of those deals where this sounded really like, hey, this is doable. We can do this on paper. And then you get into it, and you're like, I want to die.
It's doable.
Mm-hmm.
If you at least, like, block out rest periods, we didn't do that.
No.
We did not do that.
So for those wondering, we're recording this on a, what day is it, Tuesday? Is it Tuesday, Joe? Yes, thank you. Tuesday morning. Not this last Friday, but the Friday before that, I drove to South Carolina to take an Ernest Langdon class where I was going to make an attempt at a fast coin. And I did make an attempt. I, however, did not succeed. Got done Sunday night, drove back to my house, got home at 2 in the morning, woke back up. I actually got home at 2:30 in the morning, went to sleep around 3, woke back up at 6 a.m., packed a bag, and Melody and I caught an early flight to L.A., and we spent most of the week in L.A. out at Surefire doing Surefire-y stuff, and then we got done there Thursday, got back here, and it was going to snow in Atlanta, which is apparently scary, so we drove to Miami Thursday night to go teach our last class of the year as opposed to waiting until Friday, and it's just been a mess. We just got back last night at 3 in the morning.
2 a.m., yeah.
Yeah. And it's 9 a.m. now. Anyway, hey, guess what else?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never have too much ammo.
It's true, folks.
So, we've got an awesome, amazing guest today joining us, Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. Or should I say, Chase, what's the Wi-Fi password, Jenkins? I mean, how do you prefer to be introduced?
Oh, man, it doesn't matter. That was the high-dollar intro right there, so I'll take that one.
Okay. So, you're a northerner, I can tell. You sound very, very Yankee there, but where are you from? Who are you? What do you do? And we'll hop right in.
Oh, John, I'm from Gadsden, Alabama area, and that's where I'm living now, in northeast Alabama. I've lived here in Alabama my whole life, so that's probably where the northern accent comes from.
Right? I just want to listen to you talk. I could literally listen to, like, watch a YouTube video with, like, one of the Yule logs burning and just you saying Alabama on repeat. That'd be...
you probably wouldn't want to listen to it very long.
I don't know. But for anyway, northeastern Alabama.
Right. I was in law enforcement my whole life, so a little over 25 years in that, attached to training in some way, shape, or form, the majority of that.
Yeah.
And loosely started my business in about 09, or went formal with it in about 09, and that's where we're at today, man, running it full time.
Nice, nice. So for those that can't tell, Chase and I would say we're friends. Are we friends? I think we're friends.
We're friends, John. Oh. Yeah, you're good people. We're friends.
Oh, I appreciate that. I met you back at a Pat Rogers Shoot House class in 2013, I think.
Yeah, it's not further back than that. But, yeah, it's, that's where we met. Pat brought together a lot of good people.
Yeah, he really did. Miss him every day. But I remember what stuck out most to me, other than your suave good looks, was also how you had adorned yourself in Kryptek head to toe. But the other thing, too, and I mentioned, I'm like, wow, this guy's, he kind of talks funny. He looks good, but he talks funny. But then we kept running into each other. And you teach a lot of really cool classes. You do a vehicle class, and you have actually been present at a couple of Petty's vehicle classes and helped out with them that I've been at and helped out with, too. But the one that I kind of want to talk about today is you do a injured shooter ditch medicine class that I think is absolutely critical for especially, well, everybody, but especially law enforcement officers to go to. But can you tell me about that and what it is and why you started doing that? And we'll go from there.
Right. Okay. So, John, what we had was years back, putting together these classes. One of the things that we kind of concentrated on was, and I know you're going to be familiar with what I'm saying, is I want to make sure that the things that work most of the time are you know, we can do those and we're sharp on them. But I need to also be able to handle that 5, 10% of the time that things just really go sideways. The injured shooter class kind of developed from that. It, up until the point we kind of made it a standalone class, what we saw was that we were just paying a little bit of lip service to single-hand shooting, usually no manipulations to speak of in training. It was getting a little bit of a pass right toward the end of training.
Yeah.
And we started seeing a need grow for it. One of the things that early on in my career that we didn't have access to was all of this information that's floating around out there today, right?
Yeah.
Back when I was running training, we might have a handful of shootings that made national headlines, and it might take you 3 or 4 months to actually get that information after the event happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that one or two events would push you and kind of push training for years, right? Now you have stuff on a daily basis to draw from. But what we started seeing was, just like any other fight, you know, if you're boxing, you're probably going to get hit.
Yep.
If you're in a knife fight, you're probably going to get cut. And if you're two guys shooting each other, there's a chance you're going to get tagged. We also were teaching at the Basic Regional Academy at the time. And one of the things that we were seeing come out of some of the simulation courses, the building clearing portions of that, was that, yeah, guys were getting tagged. They were getting tagged in the extremities.
Yeah.
So we wanted to start addressing that. Then we started getting, getting a lot of the information from shootings where guys were getting hit. One of the big ones that finally pushed it over for us was one of our major cities here. We had a cop had been on the job for a long time, responded to a just routine shoplifting call at a Walmart. He ended up getting shot in the arm during that. Couldn't use his primary hand at all. And luckily the guy didn't want to kill him, wanted to get away. But what happened is guy made it out to the car and it ended up being a two-state pursuit. And the guy actually injured some more folks there toward the end of it. So talking to the folks there, it's like, hey, man, we've never drawn the weapon from, with our support hand. We've done a little bit of support side shooting, but we draw the gun in a normal fashion and then just, use our non-dominant support side hand, whatever you want to call it, to engage a target. The guy didn't have any idea of how to access to weapons.
Yeah.
When he couldn't get to it with his primary hand. So it really started pushing. And I think the way we did it was unique and kind of brought it to the forefront is we wanted to open up those neurological pathways of using what was available to you. So we started using ping pong balls, tennis balls, and duct tape to limit what you could actually use. And it's turned into a pretty popular class. But to me, and when we add the ditch medicine side to it, it's probably, in my mind, the most relevant and realistic class that we're running for LE and the CCW crowd today.
Nice, man. We got to go to break, so hold that thought. Right now we're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Levent, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Levent, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability, with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. And before the break, you were talking about how you guys had an incident where essentially somebody got hit in the dominant arm and just didn't know how to draw their pistol with their non-dominant hand. And that's a relatively common occurrence. We've seen, and the shooting is escaping me, but Claude Werner and I have discussed it. There was one out in the Northwest where something very similar happened, where an officer got tagged in his dominant hand or dominant arm, didn't know how to draw, ended up retreating from the scene, and his partner was killed because of lots of reasons. But it didn't help that he had no backup because his backup was taken out of the fight. So as far as, so tell me a little bit more about that. You started off with golf balls, now you're using tennis balls, you said, and duct tape.
We did a little bit of both, John, and as we start the class off, we will, what we saw too, from the basic academy classes, those SIM classes, was just getting some, getting tagged in the fingers, the grip, we know how you were gripping the gun. Folks would always ask, hey, are they concentrating on the weapon? Are they shooting center mass? I was like, I don't care. I just know the guys are getting tagged, right?
Right.
We started off with, just limiting some fingers, and let you manipulate the gun is the best way you could. If you could still get, some sort of grip on it, even though it wasn't a conventional one, to still work the gun that way. If you could assess your magazines and reload, manipulate the gun that way, that's fine. And then we would end up, as we progressed, we would take the whole hand away from you. And then toward the end of the class, as things culminate, we'll take the whole arm away from you.
Nice.
So it's just a progression. The smaller object that you can put in your hand, the more of it they can use. So we just kind of loosely planned it out that way, right?
Yeah. So how much, the first time you did this, ma'am, how much, I guess, pushback did you get from either the agency or admin or people watching it? Was there much? Was there not?
I think by the time we started putting that class into play for the masses, everybody had accepted what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
The pushback that I got when I started running training, John, was just the way we looked at it from a mental standpoint and trying to create a safe individual with the gun versus a safe environment for them to come out and work in.
Right.
Once we got past that, the training, accepting what we were doing, wasn't a difficult path. By the time we were running that particular course, everything was pretty much clicking along. The biggest pushback we got was, hey, you've got guys out here, they're not in a straight line, they're moving around the range with a gun in their hand. They're shooting in close proximity to each other, you're not working, one way, range. That was the hard part that we had to get through. And you're talking about, you're talking about, John, mid-late 90s,
mm-hmm.
when training was nowhere near what it is now, what it has progressed into now.
So tell me a little bit more about the idea of a safe shooter versus a safe environment. I know. So my first introduction to that was at Petty's class. I don't know if he was like the originator of that or if like his mom told him about it after you hung out with his mom a little bit. I don't know. Just where did you get that at, or who got it first, or do you even know, or tell me about that idea,
well,
though.
Here's the thing. I mean, Will was like, what, six when I got into law enforcement or something like that. No, I'm just messing. So here's the thing, John. I was training at the time with folks like Tiger McKee, Scott Reitz, Jeff Gonzalez, and some of those guys.
Yeah.
The first person that actually got me looking at some of the things that we may be doing wrong in training was Scott Reitz and Tiger McKee.
Mm-hmm.
Buying into the mental process, I started seeing a lot of the things that we were doing that was causing problems that we just were not recognizing. One, we were bringing the guys out on the range. We were creating a range that they could not be unsafe on, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost impossible for them to have any safety issues or be a safety issue on that range. Where we started seeing that was they were fine on the range, but they were not fine out on the street. There was a certain segment of the department that you just didn't want showing up when you were working, high-risk calls.
Yeah.
And the deal was, we were creating that. It's not like this guy just can't do it, or it's a football just can't grasp it. Whatever the deal is, the issue is we were creating that. We were not requiring them to do the things necessary for them not to be a safety problem. So we immediately started looking at the safety, the range rules, quote unquote, different than everybody else. Some of the things, the way the mind was picking those rules up, the way we were imparting them to people is the way they were picking them up. A lot of the times, the mind picks up information in two ways, consciously, subconsciously. If it's something that you understand, it takes that path of least resistance. You're not paying that much attention to it because you understand it. So that's what we were doing. And it's like, hey, man, if you don't want these guys to be a problem out here on calls, then we're going to have to put them in those situations in training.
Yeah.
If we're just going to pay lip service, if we're just going to talk about those four rules, right, which at the time was all we were doing. Before class started, you'd read these four rules off verbatim. It would take about 2 minutes, and you were done. If all we're going to do is pay lip service to those four rules and expect them to be able to perform them under stress, then why don't we just sit in here in this nice, climatized building and just talk about shooting well and never go out on the range, right? Because
yeah.
That's the way you're implying that it's going to work. So that was where we started started getting into it. And then again, that's going back to, mid late 90s, something in that fashion. But I think if you look at the time, just about every progressive instructor was giving you some form of range rules in that matter. They weren't calling them range rules at the time either. Right? Everybody kind of had their swerve on what they were calling them. But that was when I saw a move from some of the bigger name guys in the industry at the time, to start getting away from some of those just conventional range issues, shooting on a one-way range, putting targets up at 180 or as much as we could, requiring guys to move, not shooting on the straight line per se, and making them be safe with the weapon as opposed to just creating an environment where they couldn't mess up.
So, do you think that the issue is people get so hung up about I guess what feels scary versus really thinking about the reality of what people might have to go do? And we're not saying that, like, at a basic, you don't know what end of the bullet or what end of the gun the bullet comes out of class, but at a higher level where someone has the fundamentals down and we're teaching them how to think tactically, do you think that people just are sort of stuck in the, ooh, this is scary, we don't want to do this? And we got about 40 seconds left. If you just want to give me like a small answer, then we'll hop back into it.
Yes, I think so. The deal is, what you got to keep in mind is it's always going to be a we drill for the most part.
Okay.
And it's never going to be there's never been an incident where somebody showed up and created a safe environment for you to work in before the fight started.
That's a good place to hop back into this from. So right now we're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld, or the 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld, to the 1000 lumen XH35 or 300 lumen XC1B, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell "Aziz light" ever again. Now, with more lumens and improved switching, the best just got brighter. Surefire. And as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 20% off of everything at the Surefire.com web store, except suppressors and batteries, by entering the discount code AZIZLIGHT. That is AZIZLIGHT. So, and yes, that is a Fifth Element reference because I am a nerd. Leave me alone. So we're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. And before the break, Chase, you said something that kind of struck me. But so apparently, before we get into gunfights, nobody shows up and picks all the stuff up off the range ground and makes sure that everybody's back behind the 180 and gives you safe backstops and stuff like that. You mean gunfighting's dangerous?
Yeah, it is. From what I see and understand, you know, you got to look at the going back to the information that's available to us out there today, right? Just go back and look at some of that stuff, right? And I tell guys all the time, until somebody shows me a video where right before the fight starts, a guy with a red shirt and a clipboard steps up and says, "Hey, man, here's what's fixing to happen, right? Here's what the bad guy's going to do. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to follow that script exactly, right? We've got everybody out of the way. There's no shoots around. There's no people mingling around. And as soon as I blow this whistle, you two go at it, right?"
Mm-hmm.
Until we see that, we're just going to have to concentrate on making a safe individual and a fighter. So if you just look at the reality of it, that's the way the shootings go down, right? Whether they're on the side of the road, in a congested area, in a restaurant, a movie theater, a mall, wherever there are, normally there's more people around that's not involved. So we're responsible for all of those folks as the good guy, right? We're responsible for beyond the target, coming and going from the foreground, background, behind us as well, above us, below us. You know, four-dimensional world, 360 degrees, and we're responsible for every bit of it.
Right.
So the only way we can get guys to think about that kind of stuff is to set up a range where we're putting those targets in the background and making them work around them, in the foreground and making them work around them, making them move so the angles are constantly changing. What was a good shot a few seconds ago is not a good shot now. Moving targets is one of the ways we do that. Making the individual move is another way we do that. Back in the old day, the push was, "Hey, man, you know, if you put that kind of stuff on my range, guys are going to shoot it, and then it's going to mess it up, and then we're going to have to buy more."
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, "Hey, man, great." So because we don't want to have to replace some targets or some wet up rights or you know, whatever the case is, we're just not going to require them to do exactly what they're having to do when they clock in. So that was the initial push on that stuff, and there's where some of it came from.
So do you think that do you think people lose sight of I guess, the reality of everything as far as, I mean, you said something very interesting. It's like, hey, we're not going to put that on the range because people might shoot it up and then we're going to have to pay for it. And it seems like, and not even just in LE, but all the time, people are willing to put very sort of arbitrary price tags on either training or equipment or things like that and never consider, I guess, the value of your own life and how irreplaceable that is to you and the people that depend on you, care about you, or love you.
Oh, exactly correct, yeah. John, I've seen steel targets purchased, actually set in a range shed for several months because we didn't want to shoot them, right? We just bought them, they're brand new. And that goes, you know, again, back in the old days, that was just kind of the mindset that went along with it. There again, you know, we'd always been told, hey, moving around on the range is dangerous. We're not going to do that. And we were losing sight of the fact is that's exactly what we're doing as soon as we clock in at work, right? Yeah. I mean, we're moving around with the gun in our hand. There's other people around. We're working around our partners. So, yeah, it inherently is it dangerous in training to have guys moving around each other, making them employ muzzle awareness and discipline versus setting up a range where it's always pointed in the same place for them. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as they get to work, nobody can control that environment. And, you know, they're going to fall back on what they've done. If nothing else, they're just going to fall back on the habit. So we had to change that habit for them and get them actually thinking about stuff. That was another thing. You know, we just, the first time we mentioned letting the guys think through a problem on the range, it was like, wait a minute, man. You know, some of these guys, yeah, you know, they're not the smartest cookie in the box, right? That's going to be dangerous. That's going to be a problem. And it's like, well, what are they doing as soon as they leave here? As soon as they go to work, who's thinking for them? It's on them. So we're going to have to create a thinker as well. So if you can get a guy thinking under stress, let him open up those pathways, then you start to see a guy who can turn into a fighter, right? If you can't be safe, you just can't come into the range. And we had to push through that. If you had 120 people, and from where I came from, you couldn't just say, okay, these 20 people out here out of the 120, this segment is just never going to get it. So let's put them in a position where we don't have to worry about it, right? And that's just not the way it works. You couldn't control who was showing up to back you up. You couldn't control who was the initial responder to those calls. So the deal you set out on was is let's just create a safe individual and make all 120 people at least be able to safely handle that weapon under stress. Now, did you still want to call a certain segment of those people into a hot call? No, but at least you could get them to a point where they weren't going to shoot you, right? Because the enemy's here. Anybody's going to get me killed, I don't care if you're stressed like me or not.
Right.
So that was the goal, and of course it doesn't take place in a day. You're not gonna create that in one day. But if you could set out a program over a period of time, you could get close.
Do you get any pushback from the actual participants themselves that are just once they see kind of the drills that you have them do, or the the lack of, I don't want to say the lack of structure, that's not right. But do you see any pushback from the participants?
Well, not anymore. You know, again, initially you would. I think one of the things that you always had to overcome in the law enforcement segment is nobody really wants to come to in-service training. You know, it's an unpleasant event that nobody wants to do. There's a certain amount of mandate stuff you've got to get in, always administrative and boring. Usually the firearm segment of that was just the same thing you did last time that you did last time that you did last time. Now, I think one of the things that kind of helped us at the time was we started doing some new and different stuff, right? So people kind of enjoyed it. It was a little bit different. It was new. It was something besides just standing there and shooting. They could see the relevance in what we were doing, I think was the other thing, you know, taking the time to explain why we were doing what we were doing. They could see that we were getting beyond just the theatrics of the range, and we were getting into the reality of what was going on. That helped. You're always going to get pushback in in-service training. You're always going to have guys that they wouldn't enjoy it. It didn't matter what you did, right? So you had to make it interesting for those guys and at least show them the relevance to it. And then usually they would at least put forth the effort. Now, as I started running the courses, you know, as a business, you don't see that anymore. If a guy has paid to be there, or if he's put in and went through all the hassle and the bull crap of getting sent there by his department, he wants to be there. So, they show up open-minded, ready to work.
Well, so let me ask you this. Well, actually, let's do this, because we got to go to break, and I'm at, like, this weird, awkward time where I could ask you a question, but then we'd have to go to break by the time you could actually respond. So what I'm just going to do
is explain the break.
Yeah,
explain
the break and sort of kill some time until, oh, look at that. Hey, we're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. We're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. And what I wanted to ask you before I sort of did this long segue into the break, how often do you have students go, man, I've never really had to think before when I was doing this? Because I know Melody and I run into that, and we're not doing anything nearly as complicated as what you're doing. So
it's routine, right? It's almost every class that you're running on that level. And what's sad about that, John, is everywhere you go, it doesn't matter if I'm running them here in Alabama, which is behind in just about everything, right? Every aspect of the world, we're some of the last people to pick it up here. But especially in law enforcement, the thing that's concerning is wherever you go, they're just not really that progressive on the training aspect or the end of things.
Yeah.
The injured shooter stuff. Even if they're running a good, solid program, which we see, in a lot of the places that we go, they're running a good, solid program. But because of time limit and constraints, personnel limits and constraints, they may not be getting into some of the things that we get into in the advanced level classes, the injured shooter type courses, are a course designed to go out there and cover, 2 days of unconventional things as well as, the thinking part of the game, setting up those drills that allow you to do that. And a lot of it is time consuming. I mean, if you're at a department that's got a couple hundred dudes to push through in service every year, now you're in a unique position where you have them for 2 days and they're not having to worry about doing anything else. You can get into some unconventional range stuff that they just the department may not ever have the time to do with them, which is that's an issue that'll never be rectified. The only way you can do that is that individual get out and train on his own.
Yeah.
Search out training, attend those classes, probably pay for them on his own or at least some part of it. And that's the only way you're ever going to push that. So. Yeah, as simple as it is on our end of things, given the training, it's something that's just rare from border to border and, from what I've been able to see the last couple of years.
Well, so let me ask you this. You said the word advanced level class, but is it really an advanced level skill, or have we just made it seem like only professionals should know how to do this or whatever? It seems kind of counterintuitive.
No, and here's the thing. It is a skill that everybody should have, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right? It's something, if you're carrying a gun, you should know everything about it. You should know how to manipulate it one hand. You should be able to get to it one hand. You should be able to be safe with it. But it goes back to the problem that we're talking about is the limited amount of training time. Mm-hmm. The only thing that makes these things advanced is that it's for the most part, it's a new skill. So if you've got a guy who, and a lot of guys want to come to like the med class that we run with you, and it's like, well, hey, I've just had one class and that's all I've had. We turn down just as many people for that class as we probably get because, hey, man, you have to have a very firm grasp of safe tactics. Right.
Yeah.
How to be safe with that gun. because we hit the ground running in this course. You have to know those things. Yeah, it's a skill everybody should have. And you can look at my website. I don't like to call things advanced level or beginning or whatever. But the advanced level stuff in my mind is when you start bringing a guy out and you've got 3 days, 4 days to work with him, everything that he's going to see and experience is new. Mm-hmm. From the position that he accessed that gun in and puts it into play, the movement, the weed drills where there's other people working in close proximity, working out of that car, working from the ground positions that they probably never shot in before. We don't have time to get you on the range and for 4 hours run you through a basic handgun or carbine class and safety aspects of running that gun. So that's where I start calling advanced level stuff. You know, and we have big departments now that go through injured shooter. And as sad as it is, they're like, yeah, we will not be able to put everybody through this course. And the deal is they may know or may not know how to make them safe and capable.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we might just be into not having the time. We just don't have the time to bring these guys out. By the time we get them spun up to be safe with that gun to participate in this course, we're out of time.
Yeah. Well, so how much of that, too, do you think is, and it's a genuine question, I'm not trying to be critical, but it appears that, to me at least, over the course of my lifetime, policing has gone from, hey, I'm going to possibly need to fight the forces of evil, to, yeah, I'm a counselor that has a badge on. You know what I mean? do you kind of, and I'm not... Hopefully people don't get offended by that, because I don't mean it as offensive, but it seems like the focus of the job has changed as far as, at least from the top down.
Well, I mean, it has, John. And look, here's the deal. You know, I've spent a lot of time in law enforcement. I mean, my whole adult life, I feel like I can kind of talk about it openly and freely, right? I feel like I've kind of
earned that.
That right. So here's my deal, and we've been talking about it for a while. Law enforcement in general is facing a crisis. And, I mean, it's been a unique storm, right? There's a lot of things that has created this, over the years. But as right before you called this morning, I was watching Fox and they had the chief at Dallas was on there saying, hey man, we can't hire people because, you know, this generation is coming in. I don't want to work weekends. I don't want to work nights. I don't want to work holidays. And as simple as that sounds, that is the reality of it. I was dealing with that as I got out of law enforcement. And it was really, from what I had come into law enforcement and been able to do as a cop, participating as a cop, how we, you know, how we conducted business. So what it had deteriorated into, and I will say deteriorated because to me, the things driving the train, we just got to a point where we didn't want to fight it anymore. We didn't want to fight the inertia, the political inertia, whatever it was that was causing the problems in our area or our region or our department. And we started giving way to that. Hey, we can't hire, and I can't tell you the last time that I was involved in a hiring process where we actually had a guy, and you were like, hey, man, that's who we want. That's the best guy in the group, and he's a good guy. Let's hire him.
Mm-hmm.
The last several years, you were just hiring around who you couldn't hire. It's like, hey, there's 25 applications there, and these are the three guys that we can pick from that the only ones that we can pick. So you still might not be getting what you wanted. But that was just all you had.
Right.
So, yeah, it's getting into a problem. So we had guys that, you know, that were pushing back on things, training, the aspect of it, just to getting out and working. You know, like Pat used to say, you're going to have a certain amount of guys that's on blue welfare, right?
Uh-huh.
And the deal is if you had 15 or 20 of those guys, it was okay. But when you started having a whole department pretty much with that mindset, now you had a huge problem. You know, some of the stuff I had to deal with in training was guys, you know, would basically have a doctor on payroll, they could just call up and say, hey, you know, Joe can't participate in training next week because he's got back problems or something.
Yeah.
And it started being a an issue, especially for some of the required training. I didn't give into it. I would fight back on it. My thing was, is, hey, listen, be careful, right? The job requires you to be able to perform to a certain level. And basically what you're fixing to do is to paint yourself into a corner. We don't have any administrative positions. We don't have any light duty jobs.
Yep.
So if you get a doctor that comes in here and basically writes you, hey, Joe can't wear this duty belt or Joe can't perform this stuff on the range, if it's in a job requirement, you might find yourself pushing yourself out the door, right?
Well, and so, I gotta interrupt, Chase, because we're at the end of the show, actually. But, hey, man, I appreciate you coming on. Real quick, if people want to come take a class with you, where can they find that at?
It's talondefense.us.com.
Perfect. Hey, man, thanks so much. I love you, brother. I hope you're having a good week, and be safe, man, okay?
Same thing here, man. I appreciate it. I really do. And I'll see you in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, you should. Hey, guys, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com. Like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. And keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. Really helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.